Good evening. Today is Monday, April 8th, and we're studying the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter is Bill's story, and our speaker tonight is Rona. Thank you, Rona.
Thank you. Well, hi, I'm Rona, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and happy to be here tonight. Hi. So I understand we are on Bill's story. I'm gonna tell my story. I guess that this is something new, even though I've been in OA for a very long time. I have actually never told my story through a big book story in this manner, so I'm going to do my best. Yes, I've been in OA since 1981. That makes me really old. I was actually a senior in high school when I started coming, and now I'm old. I'm like the people who I thought were old when I came. Now I'm one of them. So I've been in OA my whole life, pretty much. I am grateful for about almost 41 years of abstinence, which is a gift from God, and I'm very thankful for. And I will talk to you about step one and Bill's story and my story in the best way that I can. Basically, I'm one of these people who, if a person could come out of the womb looking for ice cream, I was sort of like one of these kids who was sugar seeking, food addict like behavior as a little kid. It was, they say it's a progressive problem, and for me it was most certainly progressive. But for me, the progression was like fast and furious in my childhood. So, and this was, for at a time when, we didn't know much about eating disorders. There weren't terms for eating disorders, and the only help that was available for anybody was in the basements of the churches in OA, which of course, who knew about that? So I felt, very alone as my problem progressed, and I was, went from like kind of being a kid who was hiding and sneaking and lying and feeling ashamed of my body, my growing body, which was, I wasn't huge, but I was big enough to feel like I wasn't as attractive as my friends. And definitely it was a head trip anyway, all the pressure to be thin, and I wasn't, thin enough. I guess not, certainly not for my mother, who made sure I had to hear about that. But I felt very ashamed of my body. And as I look at Bill's story, I was, as an adult looking back, I didn't realize, and now today I know that I was a little kid in school, and I did not know that my education was being affected by my sugar abuse. I mean, I literally was living on sugar. I wouldn't eat anything else, really. And the worse it got, I was not doing well in school. I acted like I had friends, but inside I was so insecure. And so when you look at kind of life through the lens looking back, I mean, until I got abstinent, I was doing poorly in so many ways in my life. And it's only because now I'm educated and I understand what sugar was doing to my brain, that I now understand the reason I was doing poorly in schools, because I was living on candy and cookies, and that I wasn't eating real food, and that I was obsessed, and I wasn't really there. Like, I was in the room, but I was obsessing about food and weight, and I wasn't really there. And so, I mean, he's a grown man, who was like losing jobs and dealing with a spouse, but I was a little kid who was, pulling away from friends and feeling, stupid in school and not, and, my little life was being affected by this. And I think for people who struggle with overeating, it can start so young. And so that's the difference between us and alcoholics. We don't usually start getting drunk when you're like eight, but you can start binging on Oreos and sorry, I don't know if you guys use say food, but you know, the junk food, at such a young age. And you know, my obsession was really bad. I mean, I was really obsessed. So between the ages of 12 to 17, I would say it was like just this, you know, it he talks in here about feeling like he was in quicksand. And I mean, for me, that's what it felt like. You know, every like it was start at 12, I started going on diets, right? So he talks about all these control attempts, you know. So, right, you start this diet and that diet and all the things, right? And so from 12 to 17, with my mother's, you know, encouragement, of course, she was a part of the problem, right? Dragging me to Weight Watchers meetings. And then, of course, you know, you starve before the meeting to get weighed in and then leave the meeting to go get the junk food from the 7-Eleven, you know, and eat in the back of the meeting. You know, and, you know, I mean, absolutely never really following, you know, lying, like pretending to be following the diets in front of people and then, you know, eating all the junk food when no one's looking. So there's this whole deception and deceit and dishonesty around food, you know, wishes to be thin and but absolutely losing control. And actually, by the time I was 17, I was so out of control that I used to, and he talked about he wanting to die. Should I kill myself? I used to think about killing myself. And I used to want to die every day because it became so dark. The you know, hidden secret life, trying to pretend, like pasting on that smile in front of people and trying to look like I was okay, while I felt like you know, alone and full of despair and hopelessness and out of control in the dark, you know, by myself. I mean, like nobody, who do you tell that you're binging on all this junk food and that you hate yourself and want to die? I couldn't tell anybody that. And so it was just a very isolating, horrible feeling while I'm pretending to be normal. And you know, I was stealing. I stole food. I stole my mom's money out of her drawer, out of her wallet to use for junk food. I used to work for my dad for his store, and I used to take money out of his cash register, you know. And it was just you know, it was a bit like it really was, in my opinion. I always say this when I try to explain to people why I don't eat junk food. And I usually will say, like, yeah, I mean, for me, it's like heroin. And that's how I see it. I mean, to me, it's like no different than a heroin addict or, you know, and I identify absolutely like this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I thank God for these people who wrote this book because that this is my life was given back to me by understanding this problem as the same as a substance abuse problem. I totally felt like that's who I am. This is who I am. Somebody who was just like a true blue, full-blown addict. So, you know, moving along in the story, to kind of, you know, I know we're talking about step one, but I will say, I mean, obviously, I'm talking about this as fast as I can. I want to get to the recovery because, you know, it took me 2.5 years to get abstinent. I didn't really understand powerlessness. I didn't get, you know, I was in the meetings. I knew I need to go. I knew I need to be there. This is the only place where people admitted that they threw food in the trash and swore it off and then went and got it out. That's disgusting, right? But, you know, at least that we were admitting it here. It wasn't like another diet program. I knew that what OA had was what I needed. And that's the only thing I got right was to keep coming back, but I was still eating. And I, you know, I was in college and I was mad that I wasn't getting to kind of have a normal college life. I'm going to 12-step meetings. I should be having fun. I was, you know, kind of a little irritated as a kid, like that my, you know, I was doing recovery. Well, I'm grateful now because I'm very grateful now. But it took me a little bit to surrender. I kept trying some my own way, you know, and I thought just like Bill, I mean, he definitely, you know, didn't, you know, once he had that meeting, and I guess it was a beautiful thing. His friend shows up, Ebby, they don't say his name, but his name was Ebby. And his friend shows up and talks to him about this spiritual experience and how God's doing for him what he couldn't do for himself. And I know for me, like I wasn't a God kind of person when I came into OA, and I didn't really get it, but I knew I need something else because the diets weren't going to work. And these people had something different that I needed, so I listened. I can't say it didn't happen overnight. I mean, he had this way like amazing spiritual experience, but he says in here that many people don't get a spiritual experience like like in a moment. Most people it's more gradual, and for me it was more of a gradual thing of just trying to, like, this meeting is about having your own concept. I think that was a really helpful idea for me, just for starting, just to be able to start somewhere, start just saying the serenity prayer, start just saying some sort of invitation for a higher power to help me with my problem, like that, just to try. I mean, I used to have this necklace that I wore that said, "Try God." I mean, that's pretty much where I was. It was like, I need to try God because what else? What do I have to lose? Like, my way is not working, and I definitely need something outside of myself because I don't have the power to get through a day on a normal, healthy food plan. I can't get through a day without losing control. And so the miracle of him sitting there and listening to this person talking about, a spiritual life. And then, for me, like that message got in through listening to people. I hung around. I did a few things right in the beginning. I kept coming back. I got good sponsors. I listened to the sponsors. I listened to people talk about God. I read the steps. I studied the big book like my life depended on it. And I really do feel somebody said that to me in the beginning, like in the very beginning, somebody handed me a big book and said, study this. This is where the answer is. And listen to people who read this book because this is where the answer is. And I thank God because you know what? In OA, there's a lot of versions of what people do. And I mean, that was 1981. And let me tell you, there's a lot of people who don't do this, who don't do the steps and don't do the big book. Vision for You wasn't a thing back then. Trust me, I'm telling you, I've seen all kinds of watered down versions of how people do recovery. But this lady told me, read the big book and listen to people who do the steps. And I'm telling you, it was like that. When you wonder, is there like a higher power? That was like a seed that was planted into me, and I've got that. I got that was like that was a message for me that if you want to recover, this is what you have to do. Is study the big book like your life depends on it and practice the steps. And I believe that's the reason why today I don't fight with food. I don't have a food battle going on. I haven't had one for years and years. I don't fight, but I do know under and this is something in here a couple of times it says, I believe if I pick up the foods that I was abusing that I don't think for a second that I could handle them. And ultimately, that's what step one is. I understand that for me, it would be no different than sticking a needle in my arm, or if I had a peanut allergy, eating peanuts and thinking I'm going to overcome my allergy, like that would be stupid. I know that if I want to live my life sanely in any sort of way, I need to avoid certain foods and certain food behaviors. And I need to practice faith, and I need to practice these steps every day of my life. And to me, that's step one, is admitting and knowing, like the surrender for me is knowing where my lines are with food and staying very clear about it. It's not like in the big book, in the promises, it talks about recoiling from it as from a hot flame. I mean, it's insane to put your hands on a hot flame. To me, the foods that I know are my drug foods, that's a hot flame. And I don't have any question about that. And the same thing with food behaviors, not just foods, but behaviors. Like BLTs, bites, licks, and tastes. I can't just be haphazard about my food. I have to stick with my boundaries. I'm not really ultra rigid. I have healthy, sane. I can go out to eat. I can be flexible with my food within my boundaries. I'm not saying, loosey goose. I eat all my healthy meals and healthy bound, all the meal. The foods that I need in all of my meals. I don't miss meals. I don't skip meals. I don't go on rigid diets. I eat in a way that I know I need to in order for me not to trigger the insanity. And I had to learn that. Took a little while to figure out what that looks like. What do I need to do to make sure I'm not under eating or overeating? Where are the lines? And then staying in those lines and just living there. And so for me, that's my step one is I get it. I feel very okay and very good. Like people might say, "Wow, you're so disciplined." And I always think to myself, yeah, you have no idea, people. This is what I do to keep
5 minutes,
myself.
Rona.
Yeah, is it time?
Oh no, 5 minutes.
Okay, good. So this is what I do to stay sane, right? This is not because I'm disciplined. I'm disciplined to keep myself from dying. It talks about in the end of his thing, it says, we have a vast there's a vast amount of fun about it all. And I do think believe that, it's about living. I mean, it is about living life fully. There's a lot of life, not all fun, some fun. It says, maybe people would be shocked at about how much levity we have, but just underneath there's a deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. And for me, there is an earnestness. I take recovery as life and death. To me, it's not like an option to not be prepared to not think about what I need to do. And I'm not just talking about with my food. It's like body, mind, and spirit. It's like maintaining my spiritual life, having my prayers, my meditations, all the 12 steps, keeping relationships with people straight, my honesty level with people, like with myself, making sure I rest, having good balance. I mean, there's a lot of things that I think we learn in the recovery program that in order for me not to go back to the old ways, I had to learn a lot of little things to have a good solid recovery. And I need and then there's this ma the maintenance. Maintenance isn't like a diet thing. Maintenance is a living thing. It's trying as best as possible to live the steps every day, to share it with others, to be able to, pass it on. As much, whenever possible, and I'm not ashamed to tell anybody. If I have an opportunity to pass it on to somebody, this is life-saving. To me, it's life-saving to pass on this important information to people around us who are hurting. There's people hurting everywhere who are suffering in secret, or right out loud. I mean, people suffering everywhere, and I don't mind talking about it with whoever wants to hear, if they'll listen, but without shoving it down anybody's throat. But I do agree that it is such an important part of recovery, and he says it's really life and death. That is a part of the recovery process, is giving it away. And I think it's because, of course, it reinforces it, right? If I'm helping somebody else, it reminds me every time I hear somebody's story, when I'm re sharing with another person, it reminds me of where I could be. When I hear a person who's in the throes of it, I don't ever think for a second that that couldn't be me. And that helps me. I need to see it in front of me because I know what ha I think the second name for addiction is amnesia for compulsive eating. If it's amnesia, and I don't think it takes that long for amnesia to set in. You get away from meetings, you get away from hearing about it, you get and then and you, I've seen it so many times where people who have relapses, they stop going to meetings, they stop helping people, and if you're not around it, you forget how bad it is. I mean, for somebody like myself, I don't suffer today. But I don't want to start. When I say I don't suffer, I mean I don't have a food obsession today. I don't feel crazy in a battle with food today. I'm not in the battle. And it's been decades since I've been in that battle. So if I stop going to meetings, how long would it be before maybe, the idea might get in my head that maybe I'm not after all. Well, I don't want to think like that because I already know what that looks like. I took the test many times. I don't want to take that test again and ever see what that feels like. Because I know too many people who've pulled the plug on the dam and can never find their way back to closing that hole. And that's what I think it's like. I don't want to, I wouldn't want to take a chance on it. To me, this is life and death. So I'll choose life and I'll end on that note. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Rona. We will, oops, hold on. Lost my spot, you guys. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Well, we're going to open the meeting for shares. I'll find my spot after. It's 3 minute shares. Lisa will time you and I'll call out. If you'll raise your hand, I'll call on you. Awesome. Leslie, will you share, please? Where'd Lisa
There it
go?
goes. Hi, my name is Leslie. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And Rona, there you are. Hi, Rona. I just loved your share. It was so inclusive and I felt so a part of, and I felt like the spirit of recovery was alive and well in your share. It was like for me, I got here right around the same time that you did. And I don't have the same story. I've relapsed many times. And I just wonder what I was just wondering what it would be like to not, I guess, it appears that you wear the cloak loosely, but at the same time live by structure and boundaries. And I just wonder, in this meeting we ask questions of the speaker, and I wonder if you might be willing to share a little bit about how when life comes at you fast and hard, as it does to all of us, how is it that you chose some other strategy in the steps, instead of the food. Thank you again. It was just a lovely share.
Okay, so I answered. We answer?
Yep, you can have 3 minutes to answer, Rona. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, Leslie, thank you for your comment. And that's a really good question. And I will say, life has not been easy for me. If I sat here and told you, I mean, as I'm sure most of us, if you've lived as long as up to, all these years, I mean, I've had a lot of life. And trust me, it has not been easy. And I remember sort of early, a long, long time ago, when some of the early things that started hitting me, and one of my recovery friends said to me, this person made this comment, and it probably reinforced for me the importance. Like this person said to me, "Well, I've never really seen anybody do this quite like this, but you held closer to your recovery when you were going through a hard time instead of get pulling away." And I think that that probably has been true in some sort of way. I think knowing that food isn't an option, it's just so not an option. And I think then it Being able to tolerate agonizing emotional pain, which I mean, I will say that's what that looks like. Because if I'm not using food, because people always ask, well, what do you do if you don't eat? Well, and I also don't allow myself to do other addictive behaviors. Because I learned that in the beginning when I was playing that, what's that, whack-a-mole, switching from one addictive behavior to another. Right. And I learned, I'm like, either you're going to follow this recovery program or not. It's not like switch from one addiction to another addiction. That's like switching seats in the Titanic, right? We've all heard that. And I was that person. And somewhere in that process of switching around from this to this to this, I figured out I'm either going to do the spiritual life or I'm not. And that means sometimes being suffering. And actually, there's a lot of suffering and grief and sadness and anger and a lot of really intense feelings. And I can't say I particularly like that. But I can't be afraid of that. And so using supports and spirituality and just not being afraid to lean into, but knowing I won't die from my feelings. I don't like them all, but I will not die from them. But I know, I think. You've heard this said, and I'm sure it's in the big book too, that I wouldn't trade the worst of my days in recovery for the best of my days back in those days. And that's probably what keeps me from going back because I just can't imagine feeling like that again. I hated my life. Probably some people don't feel as bad as I did. I mean, I'm sure that's true. I see that some people it's not as bad, but
Gentle reminder, Rhonda.
it was bad for me. When I was eating, I was a wreck. You know what I mean? It was bad. I never want to feel like that. So I guess that's probably what helps. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you, Rhonda. Lacey, share with us, please.
Thank you. I'm Lacey, a compulsive overeater. I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you, Rona. Oh my goodness. I always particularly love speakers who are so authentic and speak with deadly earnestness about the disease, because I need to hear that. I came in 2 years ago and knew I tried desperately to identify out and could not do it. And but still I could not I wasn't willing to take step zero, honestly, which is put the food down. I just wasn't willing. I really thought I would blow into a million pieces if I felt all my feelings. And I love to hear all types of speakers who have been in for years and years and years, and who just don't pick up food no matter what. When I was struggling in, coming, relaxing and then coming back, and I never left, thank God. But I had a friend say to me, she'd been in for a long time, like you, and she said to me, I have two friends in OA who've been abstinent for a very long time, and both of them have lost children. If they can do that, you can feel your feelings. And I will never forget that, because that's the kind of earnestness that I need to be told about the disease that I have, because I was hoping my 5-year-old didn't find me in the closet because I was eating and I wanted more time. That's what happens to me. And I just can't live like that, so I need to be here. And the other thing I'll say is, God bless our mothers. Oh my God, does not every female in OA have a mother story? And I think about my 27-year-old who grew up with me dieting and dieting and dieting. And, he's male and he does not have any signs of body image or food stuff that I can see. But I know that what I modeled to him was very sick. And my mother is a 95-pound anorexic who was terrified if I wasn't as thin as she was. I mean, and I'm so grateful for the sick man's prayer. So thank you, Rona. You're a gift. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you, Lacey. Natalie, will you share with us, please?
Hi, Natalie, recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you so, so much for your share. I was only able to catch the second half of it, but I could just really relate, especially when you were talking about, like, because I've, you know, I've been recovered for a few months and I've lost weight over the past 6 months. And I have my, like, my family sees me and they're like, oh my gosh, like, wow, what are you doing? And like my stepdad who I live with, he'll like tell people like, oh yeah, she's really disciplined. She has like a meal plan and all this stuff. I'm like, I am not disciplined. I am an addict and I am hopeless unless I do this stuff. Like, it's just so funny because like my brother saw me, he's like, wow, are you going to the gym? You look great. And I'm like, I go a couple times a week. It's like, that's not why I have lost the weight or released the weight. Like, I could easily be 500 pounds. I will go there if I stay in the disease. I don't know how many pounds I would be, but it would be bad. And yeah, I see my family that's in the disease, and that's what happens is you get obese, you get heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and you kind of become a shut-in. That's what happens in my family. So like, that's waiting for me. Or I can, you know, pick up these tools and do the program of action, and I can stay here and I can have this life that I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so grateful for. Even like the past few days, I have a 1 and 2 year old, and they were both, well, my 2 year old mainly was sick and I'm sleep deprived, and I had a rough, like, I needed to tap out last night. But like, that's when I would have usually like gone to the food. Like today, I get to breathe and pray and ask for help and like say when I need help and like take a break instead of like going to the food. And like, I also think about the fact that like, oh, like what Lacey said about like losing a child, like people have like are recovered and have lost a child in this program. And I literally can't even imagine going through that. But I'm like, if something like that happens to me, I would, if I wasn't in recovery or if I don't like stay here, like I would just be in the food all about it. Like, how sad would that be to like be so selfish that I'm just like binging my brains out when my family needs me because we had a loss or something like that. So anyways, just a lot of thoughts came up. And then also just, you know, I need to continue to sponsor. So I stay.
Mental reminder, Natalie.
But thank you so much and I'll pass.
Thank you, Natalie. Rachel, you're up.
Hi, everybody. Rachel Y, recovered compulsive overeater restrictor. Rona, first of all, thank you, everybody, for your service. Rona, thank you so much for coming and speaking here at our meeting. You have been such an inspiration for me, and I'm just so happy to hear part of your story that I've never heard. So many things I wrote down, so much is so resonating so much for me. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, though, is with the whack-a-mole, I'm there right now. I have 94 days abstinent, and I am in a bit of a spiral because of an amends, and it's transferred into another addiction for me, which would be like love and sex, which is really horrible to admit. But I feel very strong in my OA program, and I feel almost like so nauseous about the emotions and the suffering, like you mentioned, that I don't even really want to eat. I'm just like making myself eat, but I have like this restricting past. So it's like, I just was curious when you had the whack-a-mole stuff happen. Like, if you don't mind sharing, did you go through a different 12-step program, or just applied the steps and the tools because it works so similarly? Which I already feel more in control of the situation because I already have the steps and the tools, but it's all really new still.
But I'm just curious how you were able to get through that. And I think you mentioned that you just said to yourself, like, you know, either I'm doing this or I'm not doing this, like across the board, because it's, for me, it's like a bunch of things that I could qualify for. And this just happens to be the one that popped up like very intensely. And so I was just curious about that. If you wouldn't mind speaking on that. Thank you so much. I pass.
Yes, and thank you, Rachel, for inviting me to speak, and I appreciate you as well. I actually I didn't know. I mean, I probably could have gone to like five different 12-step programs. It would have been a lot to try to do all of that. And so at first I sort of did tap in a little bit here and there to some other programs, and I think ultimately I did, even though I did test the waters with a couple of different programs, I think ultimately I for me, I really just believe that it was the 12 steps that I just really honed in on the spiritual, like I really started understanding. It's like it says to surrender to God. I mean, I became sort of very, even in Bill's story, when he's talking to his friend about, and then in his prayer, it's a prayer of surrender, but it doesn't say surrender. Like I had the aha, like it came to me, but it came to me after a while. I'm not saying this happened immediately. It didn't. I was around a while before I had that this happen, where, I was suffering with the whack-a-mole, obsessed with this, obsessed with that. And then, finally something, it settled in, like it's either you're going to surrender to God or you're still acting out in addictive behavior. It's not switch addictions. It's either God or not God. Well, like, that's how I got to see it. I mean, ultimately, that's how I got to see it. I mean, the big book says God, right? That's what it says, right? No, God as you understand him, but and that's where God as you understand God, right? So that was the wrestling match, was the ultimate surrender of it isn't supposed to be just surrendering food, it's surrendering me and everything about me. So and that means all the thing, all the other things. But I think probably, I think probably there were some spiritual lessons that were needing to be learned. I needed to learn about that. There were some self-hatred there. There were reasons that I probably was still acting out, that still there was still inner healing that I think, the spiritual healing and the emotional healing, that comes through the 12 steps. I mean, there was still work that was being done in me, that my 12-step process, it was like a, it needed to keep on being, there came a time when I began to understand on a deeper level that I'm loved, that I can receive love, and I needed that. That was like a healing. Do you know what I'm saying? That made me be able to let go of all the addictive behavior.
Council time reminder, Rona. Thank you.
Yeah. I
Thank
hope I
you.
answered that well. It's kind of a hard qu question. Yeah.
You guys can call each other,
We can.
work it out. Thank you, Rona. We'll now stop the recording for unrecorded.